used. And our wet ashing then, if we're trying to get an organic material out of our solid matrix, then we use nitric acid, which is a strongly oxidizing acid. And that strongly oxidizing acid simply rips everything apart that's organic in character, which is important to remember. Like, I remember in the chemistry lab at Otago, when I started off, there were some bottles of nitric acid, and they always had nasty brown vapors and stuff sort of hanging around and stuff. The reason is people were just putting a little bit of organic something on the stopper and then putting it back into the nitric acid bottle. And you get such a vigorous reaction that you generate gas on the inside, NO2. Stoppers would pop off occasionally if there's that much vapor generated. So nitric acid, just remember, it's really bad news with organic compounds like your hands or anything else that it touches. It's a good acid. If you're dealing with a mineral and you want to break it down, the appropriate acid there is hydrofluoric acid. So it eats straight through glass, it eats straight through bone, and so when you're dealing with this one, you pay special care. Like, for me, nitric acid is a known useful acid that I use to clean things that contain organic molecules, because I'll simply go, well, I can carry out a very vigorous reaction with the nitric acid that gets rid of everything organic. So if I want to clean a piece of glassware, for instance, and I'm feeling lazy, I'll simply throw a bit of ethanol in, I'll throw a bit of nitric acid in, I'll throw it in the back of the fume cupboard very quickly and pull the fume cupboard down. Get a nice big reaction, cloud of nasty gas, and this flask is very clean because you just carried out a vigorous exothermic reaction. In the case of a very, very dirty piece of glassware, when you're getting serious, you'll put a smidgen of hydrofluoric acid in. That then rips the surface of the glass off, which means it's sparklingly clean at the end because you've just taken the outside microns of glass off, or if you're very slow, you take the bottom of the flask out. So you've got to be quite careful with this. It's really quite strong stuff. The glass sinters that you guys, I'm trying to think, have you used glass sintered filters so far? I think we used them at some point, but there's a standard filter that's used in chemistry. Instead of using filter paper, you'll use a porous glass filter. And the advantage is that the filter is very robust, it collects crystals and things very well, and it's very easy to clean. But if you do manage to get it dirty, then hydrofluoric acid is one approach, because you can block up. So you put it on, wait for a little period of time, you time it in terms of seconds, and then you wash it with water. If you wait for too long, you simply rip the entire glass filter apart. So this thing then is used outside of chemical laboratories, and if you ever get in contact with it, be quite careful. Selective complexation. This then can be used at the start of your separation process to remove interfering compounds. So for instance here, we're analysing for calcium. If we have got sulphate present, then the sulphate mucks up things because it forms an iron pair with the calcium that's non-volatile. The analytical technique is atomic absorption. And in this case, a non-volatile calcium sulphate will not give us a calcium analysis coming out of our atomic absorption. So our selective complexation then would say we throw in EDTA. EDTA has got such a strong binding constant for transition metals, for alkali metals, etc., that it grabs all of the calcium as calcium EDTA, and it's beating sulphate to the mark. So this complex, this iron pair here, is ripped apart and forms calcium EDTA. This is nice and volatile, goes through the atomic absorption machine fine. So that's an example of selective complexation.